If I was Universal Times, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Kenyans are casting ballots in the country's presidential election rerun Thursday amid reports of a light turnout. On the eve of the election, main opposition leader Raila Odinga urged his supporters to boycott.
Convince your friends, neighbors, and everyone else not to participate. Instead, you advise Kenyans who value democracy and justice to hold vigil and prayers away from polling stations or just stay at home.
Odinga has accused the nation's Electoral Commission of being incapable of running a free and fair vote. The election took place after the Supreme Court was unable to hold a hearing on a petition to delay it. The court threw out the August 8 result because of widespread irregularities. President Uhuru Kenyatta addressed the nation late Wednesday, urging voters to cast ballots and then go home to avoid disruption.
Our forefathers fought and died for the right of the African to vote. We dare not reject the inheritance our elders so painfully won.
The U.S. expressed its deep concern by efforts on both sides to undermine the independence of the Electoral Commission and urged everyone to avoid violence. In Spain, it's widely expected that the Spanish Senate will impose direct rule on the Catalonia region Friday, following an independence referendum October 1st that the government has deemed illegal.
Nosotros somos republicanos y por lo tanto seguro que trabajamos.
Catalonia's Vice President Oriol Junqueras said Madrid is leaving separatists with no other option but to push ahead with independence. Catalan President Carles Puigdemont turned down an invitation to explain his position to the Senate Wednesday. He is to address his own regional parliament late Thursday. This is VOA News. In central Yemen, at least seven suspected Islamic State militants were killed in a U.S. drone strike. Two cars said to be carrying armed individuals were struck in El Baida province. Meanwhile, the U.S. joined Gulf states Wednesday in imposing sanctions on several individuals and entities accused of supporting Islamic State in Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Steve Mnuchin is the U.S. Treasury Secretary.
Today, the U.S. announced new sanctions on nine individuals and entities that finance and facilitate terrorism and are actively supporting violence in Yemen.
The Gulf states named four other individuals for a total of 13. They're cited as leaders, financiers, and facilitators of Islamic State in Yemen and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi announced Thursday an offensive to recapture the western border region of al-Qaim and Rawa near the Syrian border from Islamic State. Meanwhile, Kurdish authorities in Iraq have offered to put their independence bid on hold to resolve the dispute with Baghdad through dialogue. The lower house of Brazil's Congress has voted to reject charges of corruption filed by the Prosecutor General's office against President Michel Temer in a case allegedly involving bribes paid to a meatpacker. Mr. Temer's political opponents failed to reach the necessary votes to put him on trial. One of those opponents, Congressman Silvio Costa, said anyone voting yes was celebrating corruption. The 77-year-old Temer, who's trying to pass key reforms to revive the country's ailing economy, survived a similar vote in August. New airport security measures for inbound flights to the U.S. are to take effect Thursday. With some passengers to be subjected to interviews, they're expected to result in massive flight delays and confusion. Jeffrey Thomas is editor of the Australia-based airline ratings.com.
Many airlines have already alerted passengers that they need to check in 3 hours before. And I think the boarding process, instead of being 45 minutes ahead, will probably be more like an hour to an hour and a half.
The new requirements replace earlier restrictions on carry-on electronic devices. On Wall Street, higher bond yields and soft corporate earnings were a drag on stocks. The benchmark Dow Jones Index fell more than 100 points to 23,329. But the government said sales of new single-family homes in September soared to a decade high. It was announced Wednesday Fats Domino, a New Orleans piano player and pioneer of 1950s rock and roll, died Tuesday at his home of natural causes.
I found my thrill.
Fats Domino sold more than 110 million records with hits including Blueberry Hill and Ain't That a Shame. Fats Domino died at the age of 89. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyans are voting today in a controversial presidential rerun election.
Based on assurances given to this commission by the relevant authorities and security agencies, based on the progress that has been made in the commission, the elections are scheduled will go on the 26th of October 2017.
Wafula Chibukati is the chairman of Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. One Kenyan says he expressed a lot of confusion after today's rerun election. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations tells South Sudan leader the U.S. no longer trusts his government. DRC opposition says they will tell Ambassador Nikki Haley that President Kabila must leave power. And where is Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye?
Up to now, they should have arrived in Kampala. We haven't seen him at home. The people at home are calling me and saying they don't know where he is, and we don't know now where he is. They may have rearrested him.
Winnie Biayiman is the wife of Dr. Kizza Besigye. Gambia's Commission of Inquiry examines the business deals of an associate of former President Yahya Jammeh, and African economies could be revolutionized by agribusiness. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyans are voting today in a controversial presidential rerun election. Tensions were high on the eve of the repeat election. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said today's vote will present a unique opportunity to solidify the country's foundations as a modern democratic state. But his rival, opposition leader Raila Odinga, is calling for a boycott. Mariama Diallo reports.
Kenya's repeat presidential elections are proceeding as planned, despite opposition calls for a boycott.
On behalf of the IBC, that based on assurances given to this commission by the relevant authorities and security agencies, based on the progress that has been made in the commission, the elections are scheduled, will go on tomorrow, the 26th of October 2017.
The announcement came after a hectic day in which Kenya's top court said there was no quorum to rule on whether or not to delay the vote. Only two of the Supreme Court judges showed up.
Regrettably, and with due apologies to all the parties, this matter cannot proceed to hearing this morning.
At a final rally on Wednesday, opposition leader Raila Odinga called on his supporters to boycott Thursday's poll, claiming that proceeding with a vote should be regarded as a coup d'etat.
Tomorrow, they will defy the ruling of the highest court in the land and conduct a sham election, but only they can be victors. From today, we are transforming the national coalition into a resistance movement.
Protesters took to the streets to support Odinga, who ran for president in the August 8th elections that were later declared null by the Supreme Court because of irregularities.
We are warning the IEBC, don't bring the ballot boxes here. If you can't conduct the election in a free and credible manner, there will be no election in Kisumu. Wananchi power!
Addressing the nation, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta called Thursday's repeat election a unique opportunity to solidify the country's foundations as a modern 21st century democratic state.
Tomorrow, we have yet another opportunity to show the world that we are a free, modern state preoccupied with striving for unity, peace, shared progress, and shared prosperity.
Meanwhile, tensions are high as polling stations ready for the vote amid heavy security. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission says it is satisfied with its preparations for today's presidential rerun election. This comes after the country's High Court on Wednesday said the commission did not follow the law in appointing poll officials. But Judge George Odunga refused to quash the Gazette notice on the selection of the election officials. Isaac Kiniti is a Kenyan living in New Haven, Connecticut. He says, given all that has happened prior to today's vote, Kenyans should brace themselves for more confusion and even skirmishes after the vote.
Well, as at the moment, we have a lot of uncertainty concerning the Kenyans' elections because of one reason. The chairman of the election commission, Mr. Chebukati, had a short while ago expressed his worries that the elections would not be credible because of the factors pertaining the irregularities that happened during the elections on the 8th of August.
But the election chair has come out on Wednesday to say that everything will be done for the elections to be credible.
Well, he may say that. Probably has got reasons to change his mind. But following what the judges said and following what he said even before and complained, the election may not be credible because the Supreme Court had ruled that some of the officers of the commission had caused some irregularities and illegalities in the past election. And what can convince anyone that they cannot repeat that same kind of irregularity and illegality? Well, it leaves a lot to be desired because they're the same people who are going to run the election.
What can you say about the decision by Raila Odinga not to take part in the election?
I would say that if it were me, with the kind of judgment that was given out by the Supreme Court and with the kind of the initial complaints by the chairman of the election commission, I would have done the same thing that he did to abandon the election before the right people have been chosen to run the election. Or new people to run the election, because the chances of them repeating the same thing cannot be ruled out, because they're the same people who did the mess, and they can redo the mess again.
Now, Mr. Odinga has called on his supporters to boycott the election.
Yes, I think that's the all right thing that he would have done, because he took the right decision not to go for election because of what he suspected would happen in the repeat of the election. And so he was also right to tell his people not to go for election.
What do you see as the future of Kenya after this election?
Already a wound has already been created in Kenya by the fact that the election was not free and fair in the beginning. And with the other fact that one of the senior officials of the election was mysteriously murdered and nothing has come out to tell Kenyans how he was murdered and who murdered him. So the election is surrounded with so much mysteries which might not render the country to a peaceful situation in the future, because many people will be left with disappointments because of what has happened and purposely because of not actually correcting the situation. Because by going to the election without correcting the commission, that means there's nothing has been done to streamline the situation for a free and fair election. And as a fact, there will be a lot of confusion, a lot of languoring, and probably a lot of skirmishes after this election.
Isaac Kiniti is a Kenyan living in the U.S. city of New Haven, the state of Connecticut. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley is in the Democratic Republic of Congo today as part of a three-country Africa visit. On Wednesday, she met with South Sudan President Salva Kiir in Juba and told him that the Trump administration no longer trusts the South Sudan government. John Tanza of U.S. South Sudan in Focus program reports.
During an exclusive interview with the UN's Radio Miraya and USAID-funded iRadio, Nikki Haley had strong words for the leaders of South Sudan.
I didn't come here to talk. I came here to basically say the time for action is now. We're not waiting anymore. We need to see a change, and we need to see it right away. And there's nothing that they can say at this point. We have lost trust in the government. And we now need to regain that trust. And the only way to regain that trust is through the actions of taking care of all of the people. President Kiir is the president of everyone, not just one tribe, not just one group. And in order to be a leader, you have to be willing to take care of all of your people.
Ambassador Haley says her government cares about the people of South Sudan, and the Trump administration is very keen on the events unfolding in South Sudan.
President Trump and this administration deeply care about the people of South Sudan, and we're not going to stop until we feel like they're getting cared for the way they're supposed to.
She says the purpose of her visit to South Sudan is to tell South Sudanese leaders that the people of their country are suffering. She called her meeting with President Kiir very cordial.
We had a very frank conversation. In fairness to him, he listened. He was not defensive. And what I told him was that the United States didn't want to hear a lot of talk. I wasn't here to listen to what he had to say. I was here to say that the United States is at a cross point of it's not about the talk, it's about the action. And we have to see action. We have to see a willingness of the government and the military to stop the violence and stop the abuses that are happening in this country.
The top U.S. diplomat also spoke directly to the South Sudanese people, saying her government will continue to help them.
You know, the one thing we want to tell the people of South Sudan, we are not going to forget you. We're not going to put these issues away. We're not going to turn a blind eye to them. We've heard the stories. We know the actions. We know the tragedy. And we know that healing is going to take a very long time. But the United States is not going to give up on the people of South Sudan.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, October 26th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement, says it will tell visiting U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, that President Joseph Kabila should respect the December 31, 2016 agreement and leave power before the end of this year. Ambassador Haley is due in the Democratic Republic of Congo today. Martin Fayulu, a leading member of the Rassemblement, says there is no other way to do political business in the DRC with President Kabila still in power.
We are having so many meetings this month in Congo about Kabila. Yesterday we had the meeting with the people from African Union, and we told them that there is no chance for Mr. Kabila to stay in power. He has to go. This is what we decided in July. We, as Rassemblement, and we maintain that decision. He has to go.
What did the African Union tell you, the Rassemblement?
They told us that they are looking for a way to solve the issue in Congo, this insecurity, this lack of legitimacy, and they want to solve it peacefully. And we told them that we solved the problem last December, but Mr. Kabila doesn't want to implement the accord. That's why we are saying he's the bottleneck. Being the bottleneck, he has to leave power, he has to go, so we can organize a transition without him, and that transition will lead us to clean and fair elections.
The regional group, the Great Lakes region, they had a meeting. I think they asked you, the opposition and the government, to make sure that the December 31st, 2016 agreement is implemented.
Yeah, but we told them that there is no way that agreement can be implemented because it left only 2 months. What can you achieve with that? The cutoff date is December 31st. And December 31st, the Congolese people are saying that Mr. Kabila should leave power.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, is touring Africa now. I think she was seen in Ethiopia, now to South Sudan. Do you know if she's going to visit the DRC?
Yes, I think in 2 days she'll be here. We will tell her the same, that Mr. Kabila should leave power. There is no other way to do business in Congo, in political business. We have a provision in our constitution, Article 64, saying that all Congolese have the mandate to remove from the power anyone who wants to stay in power by violating the constitution or by force. And today, the Congolese, all of us, we are trying to implement that provision. And by December 31st, everybody has decided that Kabila should go.
You said in the communique that all Congolese people have to be ready to obey your orders, meaning the orders of the opposition. What exactly do you mean?
That means that when we'll tell people today we have to do this, let's say ghost town, they have to obey. When we tell them today we have to march, it's a rally, they have to obey. If we tell them today is the day for us to do, for example, the sitting somewhere, they have to obey.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The wife of Ugandan opposition leader, Dr. Chisa Besigye, says she and other members of the family have not seen or heard from Dr. Besigye since yesterday, Wednesday, when Ugandan police apparently rearrested Dr. Besigye and other members of the Forum for Democratic Change. Winnie Biayiman is the wife of Dr. Chisa Besigye.
We are increasingly worried because he was arrested about a week ago towards a town called Kabale in the south. He was driven to Kampala and put in a jail like 20 miles outside Kampala, and no charges were preferred against him. After 48 hours, our lawyers filed a petition asking that he's released because it was in violation of the Constitution to continue holding him. Now, when the case was being heard, then police shoved him into a car yesterday and the others were with him and drove them back to his hometown, Rukungiri, 4 hours from Kampala, dragged them to court and had them charged with an offense of inciting violence and two other minor charges. They sought bail and it was granted. While he was trying to get out of the court, get into his car and drive away, this is his hometown, the police surrounded the court and there was a standoff for the whole day as the police attempted to rearrest him, even though the court had released him. Finally, at about 6:30, the police grabbed him, grabbed Honorable Amuriat and the other two people who were with him, shoved them in different cars and sped off. Our people followed them as far as they could and saw them heading back for Kampala. This is 4 hours away and they set off towards evening. It was getting dark. Up to now, they should have arrived in Kampala. We haven't seen him at home. The people at home are calling me and saying they don't know where he is. And we don't know now where he is. They may have rearrested him. The police in Uganda act illegally. Everything they do, he has been their prisoner for the last 2 years, just illegal holding. And I guess we continue like that.
Winnie, could it be that perhaps the police, as you said, rearrested him because they did not want him to drive through the municipality because of fear that... Again, he might have a following.
First of all, they grabbed him towards evening and they hit the road as it was getting dark. By now, they should have gotten him home. They haven't. So we don't know what's going on. But it is true that the last few years, Chisa Besigye has been a prisoner simply because he won an election and people have refused to accept an illegitimate government. Wherever he stops, a crowd surrounds him to recognize him as a genuine leader. So the police has the unfortunate role of separating him from people, but people still crowd around him.
Do you understand, Winnie, why the government might not want him to do that? Because to give him that platform or to allow him to have that platform for the government, it might mean that he's undermining the government.
No, he doesn't undermine the government. He undermines illegitimacy. He symbolizes a resistance against an illegitimate regime.
Winnie Biayiman is the wife of Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye. She was speaking with me from London, the United Kingdom. In the Gambia, a commission of inquiry investigating the financial activities of former President Yahya Jammeh and his government has found that $700,000 was taken from the government bank account to bankroll a vegetable and oil company owned by a close associate of the president, Mr. Amadou Samba. As VOA's Pandere Umbai reports, the commission on Wednesday issued an interim order freezing Mr. Samba's assets.
Amadou Samba, a Gambian millionaire and a former close associate of the exiled Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh, was at the center of financial scrutiny before the Jammeh Commission on Wednesday. Mr. Samba's past association and financial dealings with Mr. Jammeh is being closely scrutinized by the commission, headed by the veteran Gambian lawyer Surata Jammeh. His lawyer, Mary Samba, who happens to be Mr. Samba's sister, began by challenging a recent order issued by the commission freezing Mr. Samba's assets.
Honorable Chairperson, adverse findings were instead made against Mr. Samba before he was even served or made to be aware of the evidence before this commission. My client has not had the benefit of hearing any of the testimonies of any of the witnesses who have appeared before this commission. I believe this is actually contravening the right of fair hearing.
Ms. Samba said under the circumstances, the Janik Commission has acted outside its terms of reference and mandate. Therefore, she says the commission lacks the constitutional jurisdiction to freeze assets.
I wish to submit that any interim order should relate to the ways and means of freezing, but not actually freezing assets. Honorable Chairperson, I submit that this commission is to make recommendation, not an order of this type, even at the end of the proceedings.
Ami Bensuda, the lead counsel attached to the Janik Commission, disagrees.
The interim orders that were made by the commission are threshold orders without, yes, hearing the party affected. And in this case, the witness affected or the person who has been pronounced by this commission to be a close associate of the ex-president. But that does not make it unconstitutional.
Mrs. Bensuda says the legal argument advanced by Mrs. Samba's lawyer was not only misconceived, but legally flawed. She said the commission acted in line with the dictates of the constitution. Mr. Amadou Samba, the main man that the country was eager to hear from, was confronted to shed light on the $700,000 that the former Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh took from the government heavily indebted poor country's bank account, HIPIC, and was deposited in one of the companies associated with Mr. Samba.
This whole thing about the president's involvement in Gambej, I was not part of the negotiation. I didn't know anything about it until after the fact.
Being kept out of the loop about the operations of the Gambia Vegetable Oil Company, Gamvec, will not save Mr. Samba from facing accountability. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pande Rimbai reporting.
African economies could be revolutionized by agricultural business transformation, according to an agenda laid out by the African Center for Economic Transformation. Dr. Julius Karaoke, a senior research and policy advisor, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the need for a variety of farms across the continent and how farming can improve market forces.
And here we identified one of them as agro-processing. Therefore, now this report is like a deep dive into looking at then how do you make agro-processing a pathway. And this starts with agriculture because agro-processing is basically based on you have to have an agriculture, a transformed agriculture that can support a vibrant agro-processing system. So we have looked at this and tried to understand how do you then go about transforming economy. Transforming agriculture then can be the basis for transforming the whole economy.
Do you guys feel that there is too much of a focus on sustenance farming in Africa? A lot of quote-unquote aid comes into the continent in the forms of small-scale farming that maybe will allow someone to feed their own family, but it's not geared towards economic empowerment, really, or entrepreneurship or business.
If you think of agriculture, basically, the whole idea is really to serve some market, because at the end, it is food that is going to be on the table, or it's going to be a raw material that will be going to a product that will go somewhere. If you are to think of agriculture, the best way is to really think of the value chain from the farm. In fact, before that, there is input. There is a farm, then there is logistics. Processing and then marketing and distribution, all those are important. A lot of times, we don't maybe give enough attention to the marketing end, to the marketing end, where really it's about the product. That's why we see that Africa for quite a bit of food.
That was Dr. Julius Karaoke, a senior research and policy advisor at the African Center for Economic Transformation. You're speaking to Ricky Stryer from Accra. And that's it for this Thursday, October 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Boate wishing you a very good day.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.